This morning's sermon is called Life's Little Disappointments. And I thought I would begin this morning by talking about an experience at Living Waters Camp. The week that we were there, there were three camps actually that were on campus at the same time. The Midler Camp, which is middle school children. The primary camp, which I think is kindergarten, first and second, and then we were third and fourth grade camp. And in the dining hall, they have they have restrooms, and we were washing up before supper. And one of the little boys from the kindergarten camp came over, tiny little thing, and there were some counselors who were hovering about the door, standing outside of the restroom and calling into him, Johnny, make sure you remember to wash your hands, and Johnny, make sure you use enough soap, and Johnny, make sure that you remember to dry your hands. And I could tell that he was getting a little flustered by the stage direction coming from outside in the hallway. And he was drying his hands, and I pressed the Dial soap dispenser. You have to be careful with those things, because if you press it too fast, it doesn't come down. It shoots straight out at you and hits you right in the middle of your shirt. So I had this big stain of soap right in the middle of my shirt. Johnny thought this was the greatest thing he had ever seen. And he starts to giggle. And I said, what's up, bud? And he says, even the big guy does it wrong. Life's little disappointments, right? Today we start with Jacob, who has a long story in the book of Genesis, and he's going on a trek because he has left his parents because he tricked his brother out of his birthright, and his brother is trying to kill him, his brother Esau. So he's off to make a life with extended family in a different land. And he is looking for his uncle Laban, his mother's brother. And he is making his way through the desert, ends up at a well. And he sees that this is a popular spot for watering the flocks. On top of the well, there's a large stone, and the custom of people in the Middle East in this day was that when the flocks had got to the well, the shepherds would together roll away the stone from the top of the well, then they would water their sheep. Working together is what many of us have read about the history of those days. That's how it would normally be done. Jacob comes right up to the group, seeing that this is a popular spot, and goes up and says, where exactly am I? I haven't quite figured out if I have reached my uncle Laban's country or not. And they reply, we are from Haran, which is exactly where Laban lives. So Jacob asks about his uncle, and he asks about the family. And in the middle of the conversation, Laban's daughter, Rachel, who is beautiful, shows up. And not only is she beautiful to Jacob's eyes, but with her is a rather enormous flock of sheep. So a big flock of sheep means that Uncle Laban has done very well financially. So in a way to woo Rachel, Jacob decides to take the stone off of the well as quickly as he can alone, so that he can impress her with this show of manly strength. And indeed, that's exactly what he does. He moves the stone from the top of the well without the other shepherds, just perhaps to show off, to water Rachel's sheep. Now, Rachel, after this experience and finding out who Jacob is, runs home to tell her father all about Jacob, the long-lost relative. And Uncle Laban runs out to meet Jacob, and there's a family reunion type of thing going on. Laban is excited to meet someone who is a kinsman. He is excited to meet someone who, by social convention of that time, can work with the flock, work on the farm. And after a while, and this is where the story picked up, after a while, Laban says, you know, you really don't expect to work here for free, do you? I really expect that you're here for something. What do you want? And Jacob says, well, I've been smitten by your daughter. I would love to marry Rachel. Now, it's important for us to remember that Rachel is the younger daughter of Laban. Her older sister's name was Leah. Rachel is the beautiful one, and Leah is not quite so beautiful. And the Bible tells us that she had some sort of eye problem, and we don't exactly know what that means, whether it was some sort of infection or if it was some sort of birth problem. But in any case, Jacob was probably having a hard time marrying off the eldest, Leah, first. And that's convention back then. The eldest is the one who's married off first, then the younger children down the line. So Laban makes a deal with Jacob and says, no problem. For 7 years, if you'll work with me, work for me, I'll give you Rachel to marry. And 7 years will be the fee, the bride price, for marrying Rachel. Now, Laban makes all the arrangements and the wedding is planned, but Jacob should have known something was up. Weddings were not just a rehearsal on Friday night and then a wedding on Saturday afternoon and a nice reception afterwards. Sometimes, because you're gathering a lot of family around, it takes a while for people to get there because people were nomadic and walked. So there was a whole week of celebration, feasting, dancing, drinking. The celebration could last a week or more. During the wedding ceremony, the bride would have, as they often do in the Middle East even today, would have worn a very heavy veil. And after the reading of the marriage contract, after all that, the groom and the bride would go off for their honeymoon. Now, there's a couple of things. Maybe it was just dark, and Jacob never saw who he married. Maybe she really was super veiled. Laban, after all, we know is very wealthy, so maybe he has several veils as a sign of importance or a thicker veil. Or maybe Jacob just had a little bit too much to drink. But the morning after his wedding, he wakes up, rolls over to kiss his new wife, only to find out that he has married the ugly sister, the one he doesn't like. All curled up, smiling, asleep. And Jacob is furious. He can't understand how this might have happened. This has ruined his plans, and he's agreed to work 7 years for this uncle. And he runs to his uncle and says, what have you done? This isn't what I bargained for. I wanted Rachel. I worked for Rachel. I'm in love with Rachel, and you've cheated me. And now I'm saddled with Leah. Laban, who has something of his nephew in him, says, well, that's not the way we do it around here. You should have known better. We don't marry our eldest, our youngest before our eldest. It's always the firstborn who goes first. But I'll make you a deal. Laban says, stay with Leah another week, and then you'll get Rachel. And work for me another 7 years. Of course, what is Jacob going to do? He played all his cards. He told his uncle of his love for Rachel. And Laban, of course, has got the good side of the deal. He has unloaded both of his daughters and has got another 7 years of pretty much free labor. Now, think about this story for a minute. Think of all the deception that's going on here. Think of all the bad feelings. This text actually crawls with the worst family reunion you've ever been to, with bruised egos and fighting and stress and people not talking to other people. I mean, this is just not a good family situation. And it's a mess. Can you imagine what it's like to be Leah? Leah, her dad had to trick somebody into marrying her. Leah's got to have some self-esteem problems and some issues. Leah's got to be one who feels like she is always the last one picked for the volleyball team. Jacob ends up losing 14 years out of his life this way. And what does he have to show for it? Well, he has Rachel to show for it, but also he's not got a lot else. He's got an extra mouth to feed. He's got an extra wife that he did not anticipate having. But he certainly does not have the arrangement that he thought he bought into. And Rachel, who we hear is so beautiful, who is the object of Jacob's desire, we find out that it is very difficult for her to have children, the one thing that she wants. But let's talk about this here. Let's talk about Jacob. Jacob is swept away in his love for Rachel. He is, and we know this from earlier in the Bible, he is somebody who grabs something when he wants it. He tricked his brother out of the birthright, which Esau rightfully had, rightfully owned, and Jacob tricked him out of it. And this Jacob has just been done one better. This Jacob has woken up with the ugly sister. Well, I don't know that we can say that we empathize with that experience, but we can certainly say that this rings a bell with us, because sometimes we want something so badly that we would do anything to get it. We would do anything. We would sacrifice our core principles to make sure this turns out the way we want it to turn out, and we wake up one day and realize, this isn't what I bargained for. This career path is not fulfilling. This marriage didn't work out the way I thought. This fatherhood thing, I'm not quite as good at being a father as I thought. This type of disappointment happens in every relationship. And too often we say, well, something must be wrong with the relationship then. Something must be wrong, rather than seeing it as part of the warp and woof of life. When flaws in the other person start to show for the first time, you get hurt or disappointed. You're ready to pack it in. What happened to my success? What happened to my career? What happened to my life? It's an interesting thing about success in the Bible. Jacob arguably could be the most successful person in the book of Genesis. Maybe you could say Abraham is a little more successful, but that's worth quibbling over another time. But success in the Bible is very ambivalent about success. In America, success is undoubtedly a good thing. It is always talked about as something that is totally positive. Being first in the field, making a lot of money, being the leader, being looked up to by your friends and family. Yet in the Bible, success is not very well defined. Or at least the Bible teaches you to be very careful when you reach a certain level of success. Who's the most successful king in the Bible? Well, it's Solomon, probably. He had the widest borders of Israel. He was wealthy enough to have something like 700 wives and 200 concubines, so he had some money. And yet it is Solomon who presided over the fall of Israel. He was an inept ruler of Israel. This is the same wise old Solomon that we read about. Wise old Solomon in the Old Testament. He was wise in some things, personal relationships and judging sometimes, but he was not a very good politician or military leader. One of the most successful people in the New Testament, Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus the tax collector, very successful, yet he is so hated that no one will get out of his way when Jesus comes into town. And King David, we talked about this in the Bible study this morning over in the Steel Building. King David, the first, the dynasty builder of Israel, he was someone who was totally flawed, one of the greatest of sinners. And we even marveled this morning over the fact that he would be the one who has contributed so much to the Bible when he is indeed a very deeply flawed man. So success sours in some ways. And the Bible tells us to be very careful about success. It can happen in that job that you worked so hard to get, or that house that you desired to move into, or the school that you were accepted into, or the club you joined, or even the church. At some point, and for most things it doesn't take a long time, you wake up and you realize this is not what I hoped for. And at first it can be a shock. You mean this job that I put in all this time? You mean this way of living? This church isn't perfect. And when this happens, it's easy to get mad. Our first reaction is to get mad and to throw a temper tantrum, to want to retreat back to the simpler times, to the desert, to be like Jacob and go out on our own. Yet the Bible tells us through the story of Jacob, watch where God is leading. Even if it is Leah, even if it is Leah that you wake up beside, this might not be my plan, but it certainly is God's plan. I mean, this seems like the end of Jacob's plan, doesn't it? 14 years of work and being tricked out of all the best and having to live in his uncle's house and that sort of thing. Yet we know that Jacob is the one who has 12 sons, who becomes the father of the 12 tribes of Israel. And that leads into the whole foundation of the religion of Israel and of the Old Testament. So God says, stick with me. Where I put you, I've got you there for a reason. And Jacob stuck with it, and so should we. I'm reminded of an acquaintance of mine called Jeremy, who experienced the call to ministry. He was for lack of a better term, he was a city boy. He went to seminary, and 1 year he was given the opportunity to work with rural youth. And he decided that he would do that. Even though he lived in the city, he would work with rural youth down in Kentucky in the coal mining areas of West Virginia. And he didn't do it because he was noble. He did it because it paid very well. The inner city ministries didn't have a lot of money to pay him, but he did this because it was what paid him very well, and he thought he could get a leg up on his next year of schooling. And when he got down to the coal mining regions of Appalachia, he saw the problems that some of these farmers did with farming. He saw firsthand some of the problems with illiteracy. He saw some of the problems of people who were doing coal mining and the dangers of working in a coal mine. And it changed his life. And he went down there sort of in a mercenary style just to get what he could get. And it changed his whole ministry. And he says to this day that God had placed him in that location to do that kind of work. And he spent his whole ministry there. My friend, sometimes life's little disappointments are just that, little disappointments. Often, those little disappointments lead to God's greater good. Amen.